Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
In the dark of night, one light still yet burns. Frightened fingers tremble as brittle pages turn. Fireside Mystery Theater presents The Midnight Reading, a summer series of dramatic recitations of dark masterpieces in miniature by the masters of the macabre. Good evening. I'm Ali Silva. A great part of the pleasure in assembling this series of readings has really come from those moments when interesting little discoveries are made, such as coming across a disturbing piece of dark fiction where you'd least expect to find it. That's not to say the work of the great Welsh scribe Dylan Thomas is all sweetness and light. But if all you know of Dylan Thomas is A Child's Christmas in Wales or Under Milk Wood, his nightmarish sketch of a woman on the edge of madness and murder, the true story, may come as a bit of a shock to you. Here to read the true story is Mary Murphy.
The old woman upstairs had been dying since Martha could remember. She had lain like a waxwoman in her sheets since Martha was a child, coming with her mother to bring fresh fruit and vegetables to the dying. And now Martha was a woman under her apron and print frock, and her pale hair was bound in a bunch behind her head. Each morning she got up with the sun, lit the fire, let in the red-eyed cat. She made a pot of tea, and, going up to the bedroom at the back of the cottage, bent over the old woman whose blind eyes were never closed. Each morning she looked into the hollows of the old woman's eyes and passed her hands over them. She could not tell if the old woman breathed. 8 o'clock. 8 o'clock now, she said, and the blind eyes smiled. A ragged hand came out from the sheets and stayed there until Martha took it in her little padded hand and closed it around the cup. When the cup was empty, Martha filled it, and when the pot was dry, she pulled back the white sheets from the bed. There the old woman lay, stretched out in her nightdress, and the colour of her flesh was grey as her last hairs. Martha tidied the sheets and attended to the old woman's wants. Then she took the pot away. Each morning she had her meal with the boy who worked in the garden. She went to the back door, opened it, and saw him in the distance with his spade. 8:30 now, she said. He was an ugly boy, and his eyes were redder than the cat's. 2 cuts in his head forever spying on the first shadows of her breast. Martha put his food in front of him and sat sideways with her hands near the fire. When he got up, he always said, "Is there anything you want me to do?" She had never said yes. The boy went back to dig potatoes out of the patch or to count the hen's eggs, and if there were berries to be picked off the garden bushes, she joined him before noon. Seeing the little red currants pile up in the palm of her hand, she would think of the money under the old woman's mattress. If there were hens to be killed, she could cut their throats far more cleanly than the boy who let his knife stay in the wound and wipe the blood on the knife along his sleeve. She caught a hen and killed it, felt its warm blood, and saw it run headless up the garden path. Then she went in to wash her hands. It was in the first week of spring. Martha had reached her 20th year. And still the old woman stretched out her hand for the cup of tea. Still the front of her nightdress never stirred with her breathing. And still the fortune lay under the mattress. There was so much that Martha wanted. She wanted a man of her own, and a black dress for Sundays, and a hat with flowers. She had no money at all. On the days that the boy took the eggs and the vegetables to market, she gave him a sixpenny piece that the old woman gave her. And the money the boy brought back in his handkerchief she put into the old woman's hands. She worked for her food and her shelter, as the boy worked for his. Though she slept in a room upstairs, and he in a bed of straw over the empty sheds. On a bright market morning, she walked out into the garden so that her plan might be cooled in her head. She saw two clouds in the sky, two unshapely hands closing round the head of the sun. "If I could fly," she thought, "I could fly in at the open window and fasten my teeth in the old woman's throat." But the cool wind blew the thought away. She knew that she was no common girl, for she had read books in the winter evenings, when the boy was dreaming in the straw and the old woman was alone in the dark. She had read of a god who came down like money, of snakes with the voices of men, and of a man who stood on top of a hill talking with a thing of fire. At the end of the garden, where the fence kept out the wild green fields, she came to a mound of earth. There she buried the dog she had killed for catching and killing the hens in the garden. "Peace and rest," the cross said. And the date of the death was written backwards, so that the dog had not died yet. "I could bury her here," said Martha to herself, "by the side of the dog, under the manure so that nobody could find her." And she patted her hands and reached the back door of the cottage as the two hands got round the sun. Inside there was a meal to be prepared for the old woman, potatoes to be mashed up in the tea. The knife made the only sound. The wind had dropped down. Her heart was as quiet as though she had wrapped it up. Nothing moved in the cottage. Her hand was dead on her lap. She could not think that smoke went up the chimney and out into the still sky. Her mind, alone in the world, was ticking away. Then, when all things were dead, a cock crew, and she remembered the boy would soon be back from market. She felt her hand die again in her lap. And in the midst of death, she heard the boy's hand lift up the latch. He came into the kitchen, saw that Martha was cleaning the potatoes, and dropped his handkerchief on the table. Hearing the noise of the money in the cloth, she looked up at him and smiled. He had never seen her smile before. Soon she put his meal in front of him and sat sideways by the fire. As she bent over him, he smelt the clover in her hair and saw the damp garden soil behind her fingernails. She rarely went outside the cottage into the unusual world, but to kill or pick the berry bushes.
"Have you taken up her dinner?"
he asked. She did not answer. When he had finished his meal, he got up from the table and said,
"Is there anything you want me to do?"
as he had said 1,000 times. "Yes," said Martha. She had never said yes to him before. He had never heard a woman speak as she had spoken. The first shadows of her breast had never been so dark. He stumbled across the kitchen to her, and she lifted her hands to her shoulders. "What will you do for me?" she said, and loosed the straps of her frock so that it fell about her and left her breast bare. She took his hand and put it on her breast. He stared like a fool at her nakedness, then said her name and caught hold of her.
"What will you do for me?"
she said, thinking of the money under the mattress. She held him close and let her frock fall on the floor and ripped her petticoat away.
"You will do what I want,"
she said. After a minute, she struggled out of his arms and ran softly across the room. With her naked back to the door that led upstairs, she beckoned him and told him what he was to do.
"We shall be rich," she said.
He tried to finger her again, but she held his fingers.
"You will help me," she said.
The boy smiled and nodded. She opened the door and led him upstairs.
"You stay here quiet," she said.
In the old woman's room, she looked at the cracked jug, the half-open window, and the text on the wall.
1 o'clock now,"
she said into the old woman's ear, and the blind eye smiled. Martha put her fingers around the old woman's throat.
1 o'clock now,"
she said, and knocked the old woman's head against the wall. It needed but 3 little knocks, and the head burst like an egg.
"What have you done?"
cried the boy. Martha called for him to come in. He opened the door and, staring at the naked woman who cleaned her hand on the bed and at the blood that made such a round, red stain on the wall, he screamed out in horror.
"Be quiet," said Martha.
But he screamed again at her quiet voice and ran downstairs.
"So Martha must fly," she said to herself.
"Fly out of the old woman's room into the wind." She opened the window wide and stepped out.
"I am flying,"
she said.
But Martha was not flying.
That was The True Story by Dylan Thomas, read by Mary Murphy. If you'd like to discover another fascinating and somewhat obscure piece of macabre fiction by Dylan Thomas, we strongly recommend searching for a copy of his screenplay, The Doctor and the Devils. It's a gruesome chiller based on the infamous body snatchers of Scotland, Burke and Hare. But before we part, we'd like to steal a moment to recite Thomas's justly famous musing on defiance in the face of imminent death. "Do not go gentle into that good night," also read for us by Ms. Mary Murphy.
Do not go gentle into that good night. Old age should burn and rave at close of day. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. The wise men at their end know dark is right.
Because their words had forked no lightning, they do not go gentle into that good night.
Good men, the last wave by, crying how bright their frail deeds might have danced in a green bay. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. Wild men who caught and sang the sun in flight and learned too late they grieved it on its way. Do not go gentle into that good night. Grave men near death who see the blinding sight. Blind eyes could blaze like meteors and be gay. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. And you, my father, there on the sad height, curse, bless me now with your fierce tears, I pray. Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the dying of the light.
That was Mary Murphy reading Do Not Go Gentle Into That Good Night by Dylan Thomas. The Midnight Reading is produced by Gustavo Rodriguez and Ali Silva for Fireside Mystery Productions, with additional production by Greg Russ and Daniel Graves. Our audio engineer is Bill Hefner, and our show was recorded at Silo Studios in Shirley, New York. Our show was written by Sylvan Sandovar, and our theme music is by Martina Da Silva. Stay tuned for the next installment of The Midnight Reading by subscribing to the Fireside Mystery Theater podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and our favorite hosting service, Audioboom. Rate and review us. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Our handle is @FiresideMystery. And for those of you in the New York City area, mark your calendars. Fireside Mystery Theater returns to the stage for a brand new season of thrilling and chilling original radio drama, Sunday, September 25th, 7 p.m. at the Slipper Room, for a show we call Laugh, Clown, Laugh. Tickets on sale soon at slipperroom.com. This is Ali Silva, encouraging you to go out there and discover the best of dark literature at your favorite bookstore or local library. Thank you, kind listeners, for joining us, and be sure to mind the shadows.